the viaduct looms like a bird of doom as he shifts and cracks. Where secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, past the mills, past the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand.
Hey, welcome to Scaredy Cats. We got a big one tonight. I'm Daniel Hummer. I'm here with the host of this evening.
Hi, guys. It's Mindy.
Sister Mindy. How you doing, Mindy?
I'm doing good. I'm pretty pumped for this. This is going to be a good little wild ride.
And what are you going to be talking?
We're going to be deviling in the history of the Hennepinville Horror Series. And I say history as well because a lot of people know that this is based on a true story.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to devil in that kind of thing. And also, I'm a true horror fan. And as a true horror fan, I'm going to be here to let you people know what movie sucks and what ones are good, because there's like 12 of them. I actually haven't counted, but I think there's like 12 or 14. There's a lot.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of them that are like horrid. I've seen most of them.
Absolutely.
But we're going to go in a little bit of the history and everything else.
Yeah. I'll get the plugs out of the way and then hand it off to Mindy here, because the Amityville Horror, I need to still do some research and watch some movies, and maybe if she does a part two, I can hop on.
He's watched the remake, guys.
Yeah. So I'm not going to be much use here, but I'll get some plugs out of the way. I'll pass it off to Mindy. Make sure to check the Dirt Sheet Dudes out every Wednesday after AEW. Make sure to check them out every Friday after SmackDown. Be sure to check us out at 6:30 before SmackDown for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the Everything Unscripted Network. We got a lot popping. Obviously, this is on 3 p.m. on Sundays, and Saturday is always going to be that mystery slot. Whatever we feel like doing, we put in there. We got a few different side stuff that we have for Saturdays. So.
If we feel like it.
Yeah, or not. But, yeah, so make sure to check all that stuff out. We got a lot of good stuff coming up. But, all right, Mindy, take it away.
Okay. So the Hennepinville Horror itself actually started off as a book, guys. And the book was actually straight up labeled that it was a true story. It was done by a novelist by the name of Jay Anson. And he was born in the United States. The book is in English. It is a horror novel. It was published by Prentice Hall, and the publication date of it was 1977, September 13th. And it was followed by a second book as well. So not only the movies had sequels, but the book did as well. So as I was saying a little bit before, the Hennepinville Horror is somewhat based on a true story. The book more so than the movie itself, but the movie itself wouldn't have existed if this true life experience didn't happen. And what I'm talking about is the DeFeo murders. A lot of people know about the DeFeo murders. Robert DeFeo Jr. took out his entire family with a shotgun in the middle of the night at 3:15 a.m. in the Amityville Horror House, which was at 112 Ocean Avenue, Amityville, New York. And to this day, people question why Robert did, or why Ronald, I'm sorry guys, why Ronald did what he did, because there's some controversy here. a lot of people say, oh, it was ghosts, it was spirits that got to him. He got and got inside his head. Even he said that at first. And then they had the flip side where people were examining him and everything, and they were like, oh, well, we think this is a drug-fueled psychosis. And he went off and snapped after somebody set him off while he was trying to be away from drugs, or maybe he was on drugs at the time. They don't know. And because of this, the Amityville Horror was born, because right after the DeFeos had moved out and everything, the Lutzes had moved in in December 19th of 1975. And a lot of the DeFeos furniture was actually still in the house, because it was actually included as the $400 as part of the deal. George Lutz actually knew a friend that learned the history of the house and insists on having the house blessed, actually. At the time, George was a non-practicing Methodist and had no experience of what this would entail. Kathy, however, was a non-practicing Catholic and explained the process to George. George had known a Catholic priest named Father Ray, who then agreed to come to the house and carry out the blessing, as stated in the Anson's book, The Real Life Priest. Father Ralph, you guys are going to murder me for this, Father Ralph J. Picario, I don't know, we're just going to say P, Father Ralph P, was referred to as Father Manscow. We're just going to go with Father Manscow for privacy reasons, because they like to keep that stuff a little hush-hush. He was a lawyer. He was also a judge of the Catholic court, and he was also a psychotherapist, and he lived at the local Sacred Heart Rectory, and then he arrived to provide the blessing for the Lutzes when they were unpacking their belongings and the afternoon of December 18th, 1975, and went to carry out the rites. And when he flipped the holy water and he began to pray, he heard a very deep, weird, masculine voice kind of demand him that he get out. And, of course, being a priest, being a father, he's not messing around with these kind of things. He's going to leave. So he did leave immediately. And the one thing that I think is wrong is that he did not mention this incident to either of the Lutzes, George or Kathy. Then on December 24th of the same year, Father Manscow had called George and advised him to stay off the second room floor where he had heard the mysterious voice, the former bedroom of Mark and John Matthew DeFeo, that Kathy planned to use as her sewing room. But the call was cut short by staff. Following a visit to the house, Father Manesco allegedly developed a high fever, blisters on his hands similar to the states of stigmata, and at first George and Kathy experienced nothing unusual in the house, talking about their experiences so frequently. They reported as if they were each living in a different house. And by mid-January of the next year, another attempt at a house blessing by George and Kathy, they experienced what would turn into their final night in the house. They declined to give a full account of the events that took place, describing them as too frightening. So after getting in touch with Father, the Lutzes decided to take some belongings and stay at Kathy's mother's house in Deer Park, New York. So they had sorted out the problems with the house. They claimed that the phenomena had followed them there. On January 14th, 1976, George and Kathy and their three children and their dog, Harry, had left 112 Ocean Avenue for good, leaving all of their possessions behind in the house. The next day, a mover arrived to remove the possessions to send to the Watts. He reported no paranormal activity inside of the house. So, and that's a main, that's a really mainstay too with the story. A lot of people say that the Lutzes actually did this as a hoax. They were trying to get money from people. So what better to do than to claim that you lived in a haunted house and you survived the tales? So people felt like they were taking advantage of that kind of story. They were also taking advantage of the DeFeo murders. And since the Lutzes had left, nobody, not a single soul, has ever witnessed, except for the Warrens, Ed and Lorraine, has ever witnessed anything paranormal inside that house. Now, going into the movies here, there's a lot of movies, not going to lie. A lot of movies, right? Got the first one from 1979, and that honestly has to be one of my favorites in the series. I love it. Very, very well done. Great cinematography for its time. Great special effects for its time. And some really good acting as well. The second Annabelle, the Possession, that came out in 1982. That was a little bit of a prequel. It was a backstory, and it actually involved a completely different family, so it was really weird. But I'm not going to tell you guys that it was bad, because it wasn't necessarily bad. The rest of them kind of are. And then you have Annabelle 3D. That was horrible. It's also been released as Annabelle 3, The Demon. Annabelle 4, The Evil Escapes. That, no. No, guys, just don't. The Annabelle Curse? No. The Annabelle, It's About Time. No. Annabelle New Generation? No. Annabelle Dollhouse? I'm not going to full out give it a no, because it's intriguing, but I'm not going to full out give it a yes, because it was still one of their, like, straight-to-VHS movies. Then they took a break for a while. Then in 2005, they did the Amityville Horror, which it was a remake. Y'all know how I feel about remakes that have Ryan Gosling in it. I believe he was the best part of the movie because of his abs. The acting kind of felt short. I wasn't really a fan. Let's just say that. All of the rest of these that I'm looking at right now, I've only seen the Amityville Playhouse and the Amityville The Awakening. So I can't really tell you guys, like, a perfect summary of, like, all of the movies. But I can tell you that there's a lot of them and that most of them suck. But if you ever have a rainy day and you want to have, like, a really good, long horror movie marathon, definitely get a hold of these movies. Like I said, some of them suck, but everybody has opinions, everyone in the world, and they're going to agree or disagree, and maybe some of these movies are right up your alley. Maybe you'll like some of these movies. I don't know. Don't take my word for them just horribly sucking. Go out and view them. If you'd like to see the list, it's on Wikipedia.com under films for the Amityville Horror universe. Now, another big thing I would like to talk about, which I already did briefly, was paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren had actually went to 112 Ocean Avenue. And they went there not really to clean Robert DeFeo Jr.'s name or get him out of jail or anything like that, but more so to see what was happening in the house to make sure that nothing ever happened again. And other than them, they're the only ones that have witnessed paranormal activity in the house besides the Lutzes. And I don't know if you guys believe in ghosts, spirits, the other realm, whatnot. I myself, I like to keep it hush hush. I don't really feel like you should discuss religion or politics with people if they're not in your family. And of course, if you're on a podcast. And I really feel like you would have to do the research yourself, watch the documentaries on not only the murders, but the movie itself, and watch the movies, and then you will be able to create a clear picture in your own mind and your own opinion on whether or not you do like this movie in the series and on whether or not you believe the ghost story inside of the true story. Because this was very much so a paranormal book and movie franchise. And let me just say this. A lot of people don't believe in ghosts and spirits, and that's fine. That's okay. Like I said, I'm not going to discuss whether I believe in it or not. But I do believe, however, that Ronald DeFeo Jr. was somehow cracked. I do believe he wasn't right in the head. I do believe that something may or absolutely definitely happened to him. I just don't know what. Nobody knows what because he never told anybody. And that's sad because I feel like he could have gotten the help that he needed and he didn't. And I also feel like it hindered him a lot because no one's really going to believe that voices in your head told you to kill your entire family. No one's really going to like let that go. They're not going to be like, oh, cool, you can leave now. It's not really going to happen. So just the way that it all lined up for police, they should have been very happy because they basically had a clean-cut case. Ronald didn't try to plead innocent or anything. He knew he was guilty. He just thought he was guilty because something was in him, which, like I said, it's never been proved. There's a lot of psychologists that say he was either in like a drug-induced psychosis or he needed to be on self-help medication drugs. Well, not self-help, sorry. But like mental health drugs and things like that. And I totally agree with that. You don't know if it's possession, but I feel like you should still exasperate all of your decisions first. And I do kind of blame the DeFeos, the mom and the dad, because they should have been paying attention to their oldest child. He was going through something really, really horrific. And like I said, unfortunately, none of us are ever going to know what truly ever happened. because of the fact that they're all dead now, all of them. We're never going to find out what truly happened. And that's sad. But in another way, that also makes it kind of cool because it leaves it open-ended and you get to kind of fill in your own story. But it's also very sad because to this day, people still don't know why he did it besides he heard voices in his head. So now we're going to rewind just a little bit and we're going to go back to the Amityville remake. It came out in 2005. I'm not going to say that it was god-awfully horrible, but I'm also not going to say that I would watch it constantly either. It was definitely an updated, more modern version than what we got in the 70s, but of course it's going to be like that. It felt a lot more like a reboot than a remake. All of the people remained the same and the situations were pretty much the same and just that kind of thing. But as I was saying, guys, if you want a really good ghost story and you want to be intrigued the entire time, at least go watch the first and second one of the Amityville Horror in 79 and The Possession that came out in 1982. Both of them are very good. They will not disappoint. As Daniel likes to try and ask me how many knives or whatever would I give this, would I give these movies, I would give both of them a good solid 8. They're both really good. But yeah, just make up your own mind too. You can go out there and watch these movies, read the book. All of it is interesting. Go back and read articles and stuff. It's all out there. And you'll be very, very surprised. It's a very intriguing, heartbreaking, but intriguing story. And if you're interested in it, I would very much so encourage you to do more research into the matter. That being said, the first Amityville Horror, did it hold up to what actually happened? Yes and no. I really liked the man that played George Lutz in the first one. Very, very, very talented actor. He did a very good job of descending himself into darkness and not wanting to talk to anybody and getting nasty and just being a horrible husband and stepfather. And it was sad. And his wife is trying to get everybody to get along and everything. She's just trying to get by and trying to get the kids to be okay with their new stepfather and whatnot. And not only does she have that kind of turmoil going on, but then her husband is changing. And not for the better. He thought he may be getting sick. He was cold all of the time. Could never get warm, and he always had a cold. And after they left, he wasn't like that anymore. He kind of snapped right back to what he was. And that's interesting too, is how can a place make you so sick that you need to move out of there? But also, here's the thing as well. It was an old house. You never know how much dust or allergens or anything was in that property. So Mr. Lutz could very much have just been really sick, unfortunately, and there could be a logical reason for it. It could have been a gas leak. It, like I said, it could have been bacteria or fungi or an allergen or anything like that. So we don't really know exactly what happened. But I like stories like this. I like giving you guys stories like this where you kind of get to fill in the pieces by yourself as well, because of it being a true story as well as a film franchise. And I just hope everyone did enjoy this episode. I'm going to cut it a little short just because I don't have my sidekick right by me a little bit. So kind of running out of things to say here. So I'm just going to let everybody go. Next week, Daniel is going to be coming back with us.
Absolutely.
He's going to have his own idea on what he wants to do. Do you have any idea?
Yeah, you ready?
Yeah, what do you want?
We are finally going to do the original Halloween because we haven't done that yet.
Oh, Halloween, the 1976 classic. Okay.
John Carpenter's own. We're going to dive into that because we got to start tearing down these classic franchises now that we have a horror show. So.
Yeah, that's what I was doing with the first Danny Evil Horror. I was explaining to people that even though it is old school, you've seen it. The cinematography is really good.
Yeah. Really
for being
stuff.
In the 70s.
Yeah.
They did an amazing job. So I basically told people about the first one and second one was being a prequel.
Yeah.
And they should definitely check out those two. They're the better series.
Yeah.
As far as the remake goes, it's
it.
Better if they're like in your kind of generation.
Yeah.
A few years younger than myself. Because I know a lot of people really liked that movie. It just wasn't my cup of tea because it was so off of what happened.
Yeah, a lot of people disliked it, too.
Yeah, because it was just so far away from what actually happened. So,
gotcha.
And like I said, people, you are more than entitled to come on our Facebook page. Daniel's making an Instagram. You can come at me with questions, and even if you have your own opinions and you want to just debate with me a little bit, that's fine. I don't mind doing that because
no.
Everybody has their own opinion, especially about this case and this franchise and book and whatnot. So if you guys have any questions, want to debate, anything like that, look us up.
And, I'm definitely going to dive more into this franchise, and I have a feeling this is kind of an appetizer. You and me will probably jump back at some point.
Oh, absolutely. We're definitely going to come back and do it together because, like I said, he dislikes the remake.
Yeah.
Which is completely okay. He's like 7.5 years younger than me, people. We're going to have some differences.
Yeah.
So, and also it took me a very, 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 very long time to watch the older ones. Like, besides the old popular ones, like Nightmare on Elm Street and Halloween and all of those, like Black Christmas, this one, it took me a few years to actually watch them.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't an old movie fan. Now I love old movies. Old scary movies are the shit.
Yeah, they are. Because
they don't care.
No.
They're just experimenting with everything they have.
Exactly.
It's amazing. So if you want to go back and see some great cinematography for its time, go ahead and watch the original. If you like a little bit more modern jump scares, I'm sure you'll agree with me.
Yeah.
A lot of loud screaming and stuff going on, then the remake is absolutely for you. There's a lot of gore. There's a lot of jump scares.
Right. Absolutely.
All of that good stuff. If you want something that's more of a probing story, then watch the one from the 70s.
But, I'd agree with that.
That is all I have for you today, my little scaredy cat. You guys all have a great evening and a great rest of your week. Stay safe, wear your masks, and don't forget, Hooty Hoo.
Take a little walk to the edge of town and go across the track where the viaduct looms like a bird. collide, the border fires, and the humming wise, yeah, man, you know you're never coming.